by Upanishad. That which liberates us or shows us the path of liberation, that is what is basically called Upanishad. And in the secondary sense, because that knowledge can be obtained by the study of that book also gets called Upanishad. But as such, a book is not Upanishad. The knowledge that is there, if we imbibe that knowledge, then only we can say that we are studying Upanishad. Otherwise, it is the study of a book. Like when you buy a grocery, I am coming back to the same analogy again and again, that you get it in a bag. Suppose you buy, say, a cauliflower, you will be carrying a bag. Is that bag cauliflower? If somebody asks you, what did you buy? Do you say that I bought this bag? You say, I bought cauliflower from the shop. And you will be eating cauliflower, not the bag. So the bag is in a secondary sense. Yes, you are carrying cauliflower in that bag. That is how the book is like a bag. But the knowledge that liberates us is what we are to take from there. So if the study of Upanishads is like that, then only it is the study of Upanishad. If we are taking in that wisdom by which the passage for liberation gets opened, if we get liberated from this limited personality, this prison of being caught in a limited body and mind, if we are getting liberated, then only we are studying Upanishads. Otherwise, well, you will can be studying book to get maybe a PhD on the doctrines of Vedanta, and some university can give us PhD on that. A comparative study of various Indian scriptures, and you can write a thesis on that. And we'll keep on waiting what honors I will get. How many positions in the university will get opened for me, and then that is, you are not studying Upanishad, you are studying a book. You are busy with all those things. That knowledge is not coming to you that will liberate you. And so it is not the study of Upanishads. Study of Upanishads is that which liberates us. And this Keno Upanishad that we will be studying today, just study means a very brief study actually. It is a lifelong process to imbibe this knowledge. We will be studying just an outline in a way, and even if we study it for a longer and longer time, doesn't mean that we will be exhausting the study of it. Every time I read it, I feel I am reading it kind of for the first time. It is, and let me tell you one very beautiful incident, very telling incident that had happened in training center. I was not in training center at that time, but this was such an illuminating incident that in the generations and generations of our training center batches, it was repeated. Swami Bhuteshananji, who later on became the president of our order, he used to give classes on Upanishads for the Brahmacharins. But to tell them, to emphasize that whatever they are studying in the class should not be taken as the whole study of Upanishads. To emphasize how limited the scope of this Upanishad study is, he told again an anecdote. In the early days of this monastery, Belur Math, and then many new Brahmacharins were joining, without much understanding of what is Vedanta, what are Vedas, what is Upanishad. And so what happened was, one senior Swami told a brahmachari, please go to the bookshop and get Katha Upanishad, a copy of Katha Upanishad. Now this brahmachari heard something, and then he went to the shop, bookshop, and said, I want Katha Upanyas. Now Upanyas means novel, you know, a storybook. Because he had never heard the Upanishads. So he said, our modest expectation is that when you study Upanishads in training center, at least you will not do that. So this is the modest expectation. At least, so you will at least be familiar with it. So that was Bhuteshananji's very special style of imparting great message, that actually study of Upanishad means you have to meditate on it. You have to make it go deeper and deeper. Let that illumination fill the whole being. That is the idea in studying these Upanishads. And each Upanishad has a specific peace chant, Shanti Mantra. This Upanishad belongs to the Talavakar branch of Samaveda. And Samaveda Upanishads, they begin with this peace chant. Om Aapyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranaschakshushrotramatho Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahmopanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranamastu Anirakaranam Mestu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishatsu Dharma Ste Mai Santu Te Mai Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. This is the prayer for strength. Most of you have the books, so you can read the meaning of this peace chant. It is prayer for strength of our personality, the body, the mind, and also a conviction that the ultimately what we are going to learn from this all is verily the one absolute reality spoken of by the scriptures. The Upanishads speak about Brahman, and the Brahman is that which has pervaded everywhere. It comes from the Sanskrit root Brahma, means to pervade. And so that reality which is all pervading is this Brahman. Everything is this one reality. And the student prays that let me never deny this truth, because our illusory experience of this multiplicity will keep on denying this truth of oneness. And so there the prayer is required. Prayer is not required for the things which are automatic, which you are going to get. You don't need to do prayer for that. The prayer is when the things are uncertain or you may not get, and so you pray for getting it. Like in a court case, people pray. Maybe, because you are never sure what will happen in the court. So, or people call and say, Swami, I have a job interview tomorrow, please pray for me. Well, not that the prayers, but at that time you feel like let there be prayer. You don't need to pray that may there be Sunday tomorrow. The very fact that today is Saturday means tomorrow will be Sunday, whether you pray or not. So, for those things which are automatic, you don't need to pray. But where the things are rather, they don't come automatically. There are the forces opposite to that, then you pray. That because of the, that although we want that experience of oneness, there is the tendency to deny it because of our experience of this I and the world. I am real, this is real, this is real. All these things we see, the multiplicity, and are engrossed in that experience of multiplicity. That this is my friend, this is my foe, this is what I like, this is what I don't like. So our whole life is like drawn or divided into so many pieces. The unity is not experienced. The multiplicity is what is experienced. And therefore, although the scriptures keep on telling about the oneness, we are likely to reject that. And so there is the prayer is required. Let me never reject this truth. Let me never deny this truth. And then also the prayer that let the scriptures, let the truth never deny me. What is the idea in praying that let Brahman never reject me or deny me? The idea is that actually that is not going to deny me, but we feel that because of our being very not a suitable candidate, I may get rejected. It is that is never going to reject me, but I am not capable of taking it, and so I will get rejected. So therefore the prayer, may that truth never reject me. And also the disciple, the student is aware, as we are all students, we must be aware too. That what that student is aware of, that is also expressed in the prayer, that may all the Upanishad Sudharmas te mai santu tadatmani nirate. Very beautiful words. Atmani nirate. I am desirous of realizing the self. I am nirata means I am focused in that. My joy, that is the meaning of rata. Like somebody is very interested in, say, eating. So that person is nirata, is rati, means the enjoyment is in eating. But a spiritual seeker's enjoyment is in the realizing the self, who am I? And so, atmani nirate, I am desirous of that. And so, I am also aware that its realization requires imbibing various different virtues, without which this knowledge will not dawn upon us. So, this aspirant is aware of that. I must take my life to a higher level. It must be pulled out from all these vices that I have got into me. Here, virtues and vices are not to be taken only like some social needs, moral principles, but the spiritual moral principles. That is learning to control one's sensual propensities, to learn to control the various outgoing propensities, and so forth. So, learn to speak the truth, learn also to study scriptures, learn to meditate, learn to discipline, and all that is Upanishads, Dharma, these things are told in Upanishads. So let me imbibe these virtues. May these virtues be with me. So, Om, peace, peace, peace. Very beautiful peace chant. And this Upanishad, Ken Upanishad, is a very small Upanishad. If you are going to just read it quickly, it may not take more than half an hour also. You can read it very quickly. Small Upanishad, but it is very, very important Upanishad. Its importance can be judged by the fact that Shankaracharya has written two commentaries on this. This is the only Upanishad on which he wrote two commentaries. And both commentaries are tremendously profound. This is probably the single example in the whole religious literature of the world where the same one author has commented on the same part of the scripture twice and not giving two different views or two different theories, but just one important principle is being commented or being reinforced through these two commentaries. So this is a very important Upanishad and goes directly without any preamble. It goes to the main question of spiritual life, and that is, who is functioning through the senses and the mind? The disciple is already a very highly elevated disciple. We don't get these questions, you know, in our life. We get only such questions. Well, how my taxes will go down, or it is, or how I will be able to make more money, and how my spouse will behave nicely with me, and all such funny things. That is the normal common life. But then a person comes out of this and then focuses on some more important questions. And that one of them, or one form of that question, is being expressed here. That, and let me read it. The words are again very poetically presented words, very beautiful words. Kene shitam patati preshitam manah kena prana prathamam praiti yuktah kene shitam vachamimam vadanti chakshushrotram kau deo yunakti. By whom desired and set forth does the mind flow towards its subject? At whose bidding again does the chief prana proceed to its function? By whom wished do men speak? What effulgent one indeed directs the eye or the ear? See, the question shows that this disciple already knows that the body and the mind, they are our instruments. They are not I. We confuse the body and I. Although we know that I am not the body, the most common example that you can experience right here is that physically you are all here. Are you all the time here? Somebody would be thinking, well, what my son or daughter is doing at this time. Somebody will be on some playground, basketball field, or wherever, that what game is there today, and some are on the political ground, and so many things, you know, and they keep on constantly changing here and there. So, are we here? We are not, all the time at least. Body is here. What does it show? That I am not really the body. And just as you have a computer, are you at the computer all the time? No. For some time you are there, and not all the time. You are not the computer. You are user of that instrument. So the body is like that. Body as well as mind. Both are together form this computer really. The body is the hardware and the mind is the software that actually runs this hardware. So this is the machine that we are working with. But who is that which is making it work? It is not working automatically. Whatever work that you want to get out of it, that is what that machine is doing. Who is the one here that is making this machine of body and mind work? That is a big question. Who is that? Who is making this machine work? And only at a very elevated level of awareness, this question not only one starts feeling, but becomes the most predominant question or riddle to be solved in life. Solving this riddle becomes the all-occupying activity of the life. The life has no meaning at all if we do not know who is this working, this body and mind, this mechanism, and how I got associated with it. Why did I buy it? And you bought the computer. You bought the computer for your work. What did you want to accomplish? We have to find out, why did I buy it? What it is doing for me? What do I want to do from it? This question is very important. So this student is asking and that is how the word, this kena, with which the question becomes, kena means by whom? Propelled by whom? If I am not going into too many details, because we have very limited time, you are very intelligent students, so you can just, hint is enough, you know. A hint is enough for those who are bright and intelligent. So, for you, just a hint is enough. Kene, that, kene shitam patati preshitam manaha, that who is inspiring and propelling the mind to go to objects, by whose presence the eyes are seeing? Who is seeing through the eyes? Who is listening through the ears? Look at these questions. And how, again, we should see this. I am seeing through these eyes. I am not seeing through cuckoo's eyes. Where is the difference? Why am I not able to use those eyes to see? I am using one mind. I am not using the mind of everybody. Where is the difference? What makes a particular set of eyes as my eyes? Where is the connection? Where the things are tied together? Where is the knot that tie I and all these things? So, these are very important questions really. And Shankaracharya in the commentary notes that these questions really become our questions only when the mind of the seeker is lifted out from the pursuit of just the sense enjoyments. If we are just steeped into that, then these questions will never become our questions. And so he mentions there in the introductory commentary that one has to evolve to that level where we can feel these things. Who am I? So this person, this disciple, obviously feels this. Who am I? I need to know that. For a devotee, this is very comparable to the seeking of God. A devotee feels the need to realize God. But one must feel the tremendous urge for it. Then only we can see God. As Sri Ramakrishna used to tell, that where it is, people say that nobody can see God, God can never be seen by people. But I ask, how many want to see God really? People shed bucketfuls of tears when money is gone, property is gone, or some near and dear says final goodbye. Then people shed lot of tears. How many weep for not realizing God? If somebody sincerely weeps for that, then that person can see God. Do we want to see God? That is the important thing. Do we want also to pay the price for it? I told about that in the beginning, that we need to pay the price. What price? This is knowledge. And so to get knowledge, what price is to be paid? You have to give up ignorance, is it not? It is a simple thing. If I want knowledge, what I have to give up? Ignorance has to be given up. If I want to hold on to ignorance, can knowledge come in? It cannot. And therefore, Shankaracharya again calls this knowledge. This is something that is, this price is not determined by the market. Other things, the house prices, you know, sometimes are high, sometimes low. It is determined by the market. Or depends on the wish of the person. Suppose somebody wants to sell a house, but is very close friend of mine, and then says, oh, you want it, well, to you I can charge half or can give you for free. Well, you are so close to me. It is just dependent on that person's wish. So these things are, the price here is not a fixed thing. But here in this case, the price for knowledge is determined by the nature of that thing itself. It is not on the dependent on the wish of somebody. Doesn't change according to market. If I want knowledge, this is the price that I have to give up ignorance. This is determined, this is decided by the very nature of the thing that I am seeking. It does not at all depend on who is giving and also what is the going market price going these days. No, this is the price. It was same 5,000 years ago and the same now also. So don't think that later on the price will get reduced. Friends, I am not joking. We feel this. It sounds funny, no doubt, but we keep on waiting that later on the price may go down and I will be able to get knowledge at a cheap price. Many people at the young age, they think or they are told by the older people that at young age, you know, it is difficult to, you know, give up all these propensities. But when you become old, it will become easier. Nothing is farther from the truth, friends. Don't wait. This price is not going to change. Only your lethargy is going to increase more and more. By old age, what happens? Not that the attachment to the world reduces. Only the lethargy goes on increasing. Only the preparedness and the strength and the enthusiasm for spiritual practice goes on reducing. By old age, not that automatically the price you have to pay gets reduced. No. Therefore, don't wait. Right now is the most appropriate time. And now let me start paying the price. You can pay the price all cash down, or may buy by installments, but the process has to be initiated. It is very important that we have to understand it, that the price is not going to change. It was same 5,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago. It is going to be same after another 5,000 years afterwards also. No change is going to happen there. So we have to feel this question right now. Who am I? What is my connection with this body and mind? Actually, I remember, and many of you may remember, that in childhood I used to feel this idea, this funny question used to come, that what is this hand, why it is my hand and not that other person's hand as my hand? What is the connection, I mean, this hand and this hand, how I and the hand, they are connected? It is this question that find out the answer to this, that what is the connection between this I and the body and mind? We are aware that this I is propelling these organs to function. I am seeing through the eyes. I am breathing through the lungs. I am thinking through the mind. These are all instruments. We are aware of this, and we have to therefore find out who this user really is. We are feeling the user, but we are not really finding it. And that is a very irritating thing, that we feel that what we want is near about somewhere, but we are not able to lay hands on it. It is that once it so happened, it happens sometimes, but once it was very irritating. It is, I had put my cell phone somewhere in the room, and as the standard method to discover it is, you dial that number and then it starts making its ringing noise, and then you know where it is. So I was able to hear the faint noise from somewhere in the room, but I was not able to find out where it is. Hey, is it here? Because it was reverberating also. So you feel it is here, and then you look, no, oh, then it must be there, then it must be there, then it must be there. So this noise of the self, this sound of the self, we are hearing all the time, are we not? We are always saying I, through the body, through the mind. I had been to India. What had gone to India? The body had gone to India. But at that time I was talking through the body. I had a nice breakfast. Whatever the food items were put in this bag called stomach. But I say I, because the I is, the sound of I is coming from there. But I am not able to pinpoint it, to get hold of it. Actually that is causing me to look here, there, everywhere. When we are attracted to something, say any particular form or any particular sound, any particular sense. Actually, that is what is attracting us. And that is why one of the names of the God, very familiar name for Hindus, Krishna, Lord Krishna. What it means is the word Krishna means that which attracts, the attracting force. That is really what is attracting us, but we are not able to find out where it is. So sometimes I feel that it is here and I am getting attracted to something. That attraction, friends, does not last, because I see that it is not there. I am not able to find it there. And then I go back. But again, I feel the sound coming from there. Again and again, I try to to get hold of it there. But I don't get hold of it. I get attracted to, say, ice cream. And then, hey, because that ice cream is attracting me, I feel that the source of attraction is there. I go there and feel that, okay, let me eat it, and then I will feel so happy. But soon I feel, no, well, gone. The sensation was felt while from here it went down, and that's about it then. And afterwards, after eating, say, one scoop or two scoops, I even don't want to look at it, you see. Because, no, it is not there. The attraction has gone temporarily. Again, next day I feel, okay, this time I will get all the happiness from there. The source of attraction will be found. And again, through different things, we try to get at that. But then we feel, after giving many attempts, many tries, that I am making some big blunder somewhere. Why am I not able to get it then? My methods must be wrong. I am looking at the wrong place. I am looking everywhere else. In Vedanta, that is told through a very familiar, a very funny story. But it is so instructive a story. You all know that story, but let us remind ourselves of that story, that 10 friends set out for a picnic. They were to cross the river in a small canoe. So they got into it, and then afterwards, when they went to the other bank, one of them thought that it is a good idea to see whether all 10 of us have come or not. So that man started counting. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I think left somebody there on the other bank. Not all 10 of us have come. This other fellow said, no, no, let me count. Again, 9. And an onlooker was watching their plight, that they were very perturbed that we missed somebody. Whom did we miss? Looking. See, they were agonized that what happened? Did that fellow drown in the river? Big problem. Where is that one? Gone. And an onlooker watching said that, oh, what's your problem, dear? Said, well, we started 10 and we are 9, so we are wondering what happened to one of our friends. Is it so? Please count again for me. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then onlooker took the hand of that person and put it on his chest. Said, this is the 10th one. This is the missing one. And this is what we are missing, and therefore facing all these problems, friends. What is being missed is not there. We try to go there and get it. I feel maybe if I get lot of money, I will get it. We try to get it through there. I feel that if I get a nice partner in life, then it will all be obtained. Or if I get children, then it will be obtained. If I get lot of prestige in society, if I become president or mayor or governor or president, then I will get it. No, it is here. The whole direction is wrong. And going there, we will never find it. It is here you find it. How far is this microphone from me? How far? Just 12 inches, just at hand, I can touch it. It is, there is, means practically no distance between the microphone and me. It is so close. But if my face is pointing in the other direction, how far is this microphone from me? Well, practically infinite distance, 25,000 miles, the earth is round, you know. So earth being round, it is, we will eventually get there, but after going 25,000 miles, hey, here. So, we are going in the wrong direction. It is right with us, but we feel, I will find it here, I will find it there, and thus don't get it. So this is, therefore this disciple, this student is feeling that there is some problem. I have to go to the teacher to get the answer. This going to the teacher is very important step in spiritual life. Going to the teacher. Going to the teacher, what does it signify, friends? Humility. It signifies that I am ready to surrender my ego. And that is the idea of going to the teacher in spiritual life. By my efforts, I am not able to find out. My efforts are taking me in the opposite direction. I don't know what to do now. So, let me turn on the GPS. Suppose we are driving and we will control GPS. Then I know that place is around somewhere. Know that it is. And then we don't find. And then let me turn on the GPS. So this disciple turns on the GPS. Guru positioning system, you know. GPS. Guru. It is turns on. Goes to the guru. Goes to the teacher. Please instruct me. It is a very important step. In Mundaka Upanishad also, you see the same idea that after making lot of efforts, in Mundaka Upanishad, a history is given of this evolution. Before the question can be answered, they told that you go out, do so many things, do all the big, big things, take up big projects. Because you see that the question has to be answered, and so let me take up a big project. Let me organize a big community or do some big charity work. And after doing all this, this person realizes, no, you cannot get it like that. Verse there is so touching, so powerful. It says, Pariksha lokan karma chitan brahmano nirvedamayat, that after examining this universe, examining is important. That if we learn to examine our experiences, the wisdom will come very quickly. We don't examine, we don't analyze our experiences. We just keep on repeating and then call that as experience. We are experienced in life. I live for, say, 90 years, 100 years, 60 years, 70 years, whatever. And we feel that we are very experienced. What experience we have been addicted to making the same mistakes over and over again, that's all. Have we analyzed what we have been doing? We had in another ashrama I used to be. So a typist was employed for work, and he said that he is experienced typist. So this is a real story, friends. And then when the work was making so many mistakes and all that, so when I said, but that typist said he has so many experience, so much of experience, and one of our senior swamis remarked, he has the experience of committing these mistakes for so many years, again and again, and so he is addicted to those. So we are addicted to that. Sri Ramakrishna showed how to analyze the experience. That he said, well, you have a desire. Suppose he told, showing his own example. It is of course for our teaching, not that he ever had any desire, but to show us. He said, well, one day I had then the desire of eating rasagulla. So what did I, it is, I took some rasagulla. And then moved them from this end of the mouth to that end. And was telling mine, this is called rasagulla. This is called eating of rasagulla. It is, after all, this is also made by the same thing that the other eatables are made. It tastes good only as long as it is in the mouth, in the oral cavity. Well, and why you got desire for such a thing? This again becomes filth afterwards. So why did you get desire for such a thing? Mind, well, you tried once, now at least remember not to have such desire. This is analyzing and learning that there is nothing in this worth aspiring for. This experience, analyzing and learning from it, that there is nothing worth going for it. So if we analyze this, analyze our so-called experience, then we will learn from the experience. Otherwise the experiences will come, learning will not happen. So for learning, therefore, we have to have this analytical attitude about it, that let me see what is happening. And so this student learns by analyzing that there is nothing here. And so approaches the teacher and asks this question. This person is really, therefore, fit to receive knowledge. Unless we are fit to get the knowledge, the guru is not going to give the knowledge. Not fit. It is, fitness is very important, and what brings the fitness? The real urge. We feel that, well, Sri Ramakrishna gave this knowledge to Narendranath. He asked him that, well, have you seen God? And then he told him that it is, yes, I have seen God, and more clearly than I see you. And if you want to see God, then you can also see it. If you do what I tell you to do, you also will be able to see it. So we feel, wow, that's a good thing. And then many devotees, they ask Swamis, have you seen God? One Swami gave a nice reply. Look, in such retreat, that question somebody asked, have you seen God? And then that Swami said, well, understand that I am not Sri Ramakrishna and you are not Swami Vivekananda. Because is there real urgency in Sri Ramakrishna's, that gospel of Sri Ramakrishna we read, that it, not only Narendranath asked this question to Sri Ramakrishna, There are others also who ask the same question to Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna does not give that answer. Because there is no real urgency for that. It was just an academic question to draw Sri Ramakrishna into vain arguments. And he could easily see that after all. And so, for example, a scholar from Konnagar, he is asking that question to Sri Ramakrishna. Have you seen God? And Sri Ramakrishna said, well, scriptures say that God cannot be seen. He's beyond mind and beyond speech and all that. Didn't want to get drawn into argumentation. Why the two different answers? Because although the questions looked similar, it was not same. See, actually our urge, what we really want to ask, gets into these words. But the words really encrypt it. They appear same. Like that story, one man was looking over the shoulder of another person on the computer. And then he asked, hey, why, what are you looking? He said, well, I now know your password. It is 8*. Now is 8* the, whatever password you are typing, it gets converted into an asterisk mark there, that's all. It is not the password. It looks the same. Is it same? It is not. So the question that is being asked looks the same. These words of Upanishads are really these encryptions. So many people will read it, but only those who are able to decipher it will be able to remove that encryption and see that. They will understand the message. Others will not understand. Others will get the empty words, only the asterisk marks. The computer will not open. Keep on pressing, 8* again and again. It will not work. That is not really the password. So, this is the password. The words here is not the real quest is inside that is coming through these words. And the guru understands that. And so is replying now. That is the second verse. Shrotrasya shrotram manaso manoyat vachoha vacham sau pranasya prana chakshushas chakshu atimuchya dhira pretyasmal lokad amrita bhavanti. It is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of the speech. He is also the prana of the prana, the eye of the eye. Knowing him, the wise, having relinquished all false identification with self, with the senses, become immortal when departed from this world. A great answer, but again, encrypted. What is the answer? Really, we will not feel it as answer at all. Who is seeing through the eye? It is the eye of the eye. What do we know by this? Nothing much. It is the eye of the eye. Then who is watching through the eye of the eye of the eye? Well, there is another eye of the eye of the eye. Who is hearing through the ear? It is the ear of the ear. Then who is behind that? Again, ear of the ear of the ear. What is this kind of answer? It does not answer. Should you know, inform something, a solution should be given. Doesn't really give any solution. Where does Peter live? In front of the house of the Paul. Where is the house of the Paul? That is right across Peter's house. But tell me where both of them live. They live across each other's. So what do we know? Nothing. We do not know anything by that answer. So this answer appears to be like that. This answer is a very profound answer. It is, the teacher is telling that there is no entity that you can catch by the senses. It is something that is transcendental. It transcends your body and mind, and yet your body and mind can work only because of it. That is the message that is given. And therefore, this word there, atimuchya dhira, atimuchya means transcending. And going beyond this appearance, then you will realize it. You will experience this. Tulsidas says about this story of Rama, that he is writing the biography of Rama. So he says, now I am telling you a story that is cannot be told. That story cannot be told. Akatha kahani. That story which is cannot be told. I am telling you that story. How can you tell it then? Why are you telling? You can feel it. You can experience it, but can never be described. So the description is only a help to experience it. It is through this description we have to go to the experience. These words are like the ropes to climb and go beyond. So that is why this word atimuchya, going beyond. One has to go beyond these limitations imposed by the body, the mind, and so forth. Body and mind, very good instruments, but to be tied down to them, then it's not good. Imagine, if you are constantly tied down with your instrument, say car is very good instrument, you use it, but suppose you are always locked in the car, is it a fun? The car becomes your prison then. You are imprisoned in the car, you have no freedom to come out of it. So, this is atimuchya, get out of this prison. And then what you will see? Prityasmal loka damruta bhavanti. That it is, you then go beyond this illusory world, the world of appearances, world where you are continuously cheated. You go beyond this world and become immortal. You reach the goal of life. And then he says that, well, that is the way it can be taught. The next verse says that I would have liked to tell you very specifically that this is the answer. But how can I tell? It is far subtler, but very, very sublime and fine for the instrument of the senses and body to catch. It, just as you cannot see an electron by the eyes, by our regular eyes, you cannot see them, and therefore can you conclude that they don't exist? Well, you have to get finer and finer instruments to get an idea of that. You cannot really otherwise see that existence. You don't see with these regular eyes any little worms in yogurt. But take a magnifying glass. And don't do it, otherwise you will not enjoy eating yogurt. But you will see all little worms there in the yogurt. Now, do they come because you put a magnifying glass? No, they are there, but with this gross instrument, you cannot catch them. So, this one who is beyond the senses cannot be caught by the senses. So, he says, na tatra chakshur gacchati, na vaag gacchati, na mano, na vidmo, na vijanimo, yatha etad anushishyat, anya deva tad vidita tatho, vidita tadhi. Iti shushrum purve sham ye nastad vyacha chakshire. A very beautiful idea that there goes neither the eye, nor speech, nor mind. All our instruments of knowledge, they fall short of comprehending this. And therefore, I don't know now how to explain it. It is difficult to explain it. I have no way to explain it. And that is how our teachers also had told us. This sage says, Iti Shushruma Purvesham, Ye Nastad Vyachachakshire. Our teachers who had taught us, they also told us just like this. Because there is no other way of telling. Because it is, and this is a great statement here, Anya Deva Tad Viditat. It is different from all that is known. That which you are asking is Anya Deva. It is different from all that is known. So can you call it unknown? No! It is Aviditat Adhi. It is superior to the what you call unknown. It is, Swami Vivekananda explains it very beautifully in Practical Vedanta as well as Jnana Yoga, that the self is not known to you like you know a chair. But is that unknown? No, it is in a way, you know yourself more than the chair. Because to know the chair, first you know I, and then through that you are knowing the chair. I know the chair. I know the Washington DC. I know India. What is the common factor in that? We say I is first known, and through that everything else gets known. And so therefore it is superior to known. It is the most known thing and the most unknown also for the senses. Senses cannot catch it. So let us feel this, that the transcendent nature of the self, and not just transcendent, but transcendentally immanent. It is immanent in the sense that although the senses cannot catch it, senses cannot function without it. Just an analogy, don't stretch it too much, that can you catch electricity by all these electric appliances? You cannot really see electricity. But although electricity is not confined in any of these electric appliances, none of these appliances will work if there is no electricity. These appliances, like all these light fixtures, these microphones, and so many other things here, they are functioning only because of the electricity. In fact, whether power is there or not, you test it by looking at the appliances. Are the lights on? If I can get those lights on, that means power is. Otherwise, the power is not. So, it is because of the presence of the self, everything is shining. Everything is appearing. Everything is being seen as functional. So, it is beyond and yet in and through everything. That self is really appearing. So, the next verses, that quite a few next verses tell that yadvacha anabhiditam yena vag abhyudyate tadeva brahmatvam viddhi nat edam yadidam upasate. And the same thing repeats with the name of different organs, that you cannot catch that self or Brahman through a particular sense or organ. But that sense is functioning because of the presence of the self. So, this idea is being given there again and again. And then this disciple learns this from the teacher. He got this message, this idea. And Then he thinks that I must now practice it. I must meditate on it. I must internalize it. Like the food that we eat, and the food is presented. Now we eat it. Just eating is not enough. We have to digest it. The whole process has to go through, to be gone through. And then the food really gets internalized. So, similarly, this knowledge heard from the teacher, now the student meditates on it, feels it, tries to connect his life to it, tries to see the inner essence of this teaching, and now feels that, well, he has understood. And so comes to the teacher that now he has got it. Just wants to confirm from the teacher, has he got it right or not. The teacher is looking at the student, that teacher can know. They have that capacity. I mean, it is not very unusual. We depend too much on that person has to tell me. Actually, not necessary. Without telling, without using words, the communication can happen very nicely, very deeply. Just by looking at the face, many things can be understood, even without a word is spoken about it. If we have that knack, you can look at the eyes of a person and the eyes tell a lot more than 1,000 words can tell. And the face tells a lot. Just the appearance tells a lot. So this teacher just looks at the student and then tells him. This is the second part. This Keno Upanishad has four parts. So we are now going to the second part. If you think, यदि मन्यसे सुवेदेति दभ्रमेवापि नूनं त्वं वेत्थ ब्रह्मणो रूपं यदस्य त्वं यदस्य देवेषु अथ तु मीमांसम एव ते मन्ये विदितम्. सो दे स्टूडेंट इज टोल्ड बाय द टीचर, नाउ इफ यू थिंक दैट यू हैव नाउ अंडरस्टूड, लेट मी टेल यू, you have understood very little. The student must have become crestfallen. But because we feel as we read Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna or any such religious book, go to Vedanta Society and talk with Swamis, and then we can tell, I know, you know what Vedanta, you know, I have studied. I have read Swami Vivekananda, something like that. I have read a couple of books and I know. What do we know? So, it is, we know very little. And this, such a qualified student is being told this. If, what the teacher wouldn't have even bothered to speak with people like us, you know. That it is, even such a student, with such penetrative, analytical bent of mind and such sincere devotion, still that student is told, well, if you think you have known, you have the Brahm, means very little, infinitesimally small part of it is only known by you. And he says to him, Atha tu mimamsyam evate. And the last line here, that you further have to meditate on it, go deeper. And then the student tells, now I know. And this is the true knowledge that the student gets. Why true knowledge? Now the student has realized it by going deeper. What did the student understand? That the student tells that it is the second verse in this. Naham manye suvedeti. Now I have understood. that it is, it cannot be known like that. And I do not say that I don't know it either. And therefore, now he doesn't say, therefore I know it. Those amongst us who understand it like this, they know. That because that I is now gone. And I know, therefore, is not there anymore. So, this knowledge is just manifesting. And so that is being expressed to the teacher. This whole thing is that summarized in the next verse. Yasya matam, tasya matam, matam yasya na vedasaha, avijnatam vijanatam, vijnatam avijanatam. Reading these statements, many bookish scholars therefore say Vedanta is all contradictory. It is not a philosophy at all, full of contradictions, because it says here that it is avijñātam vijānatām. Those who know, they do not know it. And those who do not know, vijñātam avijānatām. Avijānata means those who do not know it. So it is a very complex statement really. That let me tell you a story. That I like that story. I'm sure I have told you here before that story. That two spiritual aspirants, they had gone to a Himalayan cave. And they were staying together and doing their meditational practices, spiritual practices. And one of them used to read, spend a lot of time in reading scriptures. And after reading for quite some time every day, he would close the book and say, "Oh, can't understand." And then this routine went on. Every day this used to happen. Read. Close the book, can't understand. So after many years like this passed, one day again he sat with the same routine, studying the scriptures. Devotionally he touched the book to his forehead, saluted, studied for a long time. And something changed. Instead of saying, can't understand, he said, understood. And his companion said, "Huh? What is this? You have been saying every day, I have been hearing for years that you would close the book and say, can't understand. Today, how did you understand? What did you understand?" He said, "Understood that it cannot be understood." And that is, friends, a great understanding. A great understanding. That it cannot be understood in this manner. To get that understanding, we have to do a lot of introspection, to go deeper, to feel the truth, that it is not something that you can make a part of your brain. No, it cannot be confined in the cavity of your brain. It is too big for that. You cannot understand it. That understanding is a great understanding. You know that it cannot be understood. So that is why those who do not know, they know it. Those who know, they do not know it. It is a very enigmatic answer. And therefore this is not to be understood just by looking at the grammar and so forth. It is to be felt. It is the matter of going deep and feeling it. And then you see one of the greatest verses in all the Upanishadic literature comes here, the fourth verse in the second chapter. Pratibodh viditam matam Atmana vindate viryam, vidyaya vindate mrutam. It is being known. In every vibration of consciousness, in everything that you are knowing, actually you are knowing that self alone. That is manifesting in each vibration of awareness. When I am knowing, say, Atmajnana Nandiji, I am knowing that self. When I am knowing this, say, this microphone, I am knowing that. It is that awareness comes. It is like every through, in and through every wave, I am actually becoming aware of the ocean. It is the ocean that is manifesting in forms of these waves. When you are, say, watching a movie, in earlier days when the movies were not there, they used to give some other examples like the a cloth, a painting and all that. Now we have this analogy of movie which works better. That in the movie we see so many different pictures, so many actions happening on the screen. Where is the screen? Do we see the screen? Do we see the screen? Well, where is the screen? If you want to tell somebody, show somebody where the screen is, suppose you think of a child who has never seen movie. Not possible these days, but imagine that it is somebody who has not seen a movie. And ask his parent accompanying him, where is the movie? I am seeing it. Where is the screen? Now, wherever that his mom or dad is pointing the finger, there is going to be some picture or the other. And they suppose there is the picture of a girl there. The child will say, hey, that is the girl. And girl is not screen. Don't try to fool me. You are just kidding. No. It is the girl screen or not screen? How to show that little child the screen? Can that screen be shown to the child while the movie is on? Well, can be. That is where the transcendence is important. Look at these pictures. They come and go. They change. There is movement. How are you able to see it? There is something that is not changing. That is running in and through all these pictures. This is all a big movie, friends. All these names and forms, all these pictures, they are being presented actually on the screen of the self. The I, the self, is the common screen on which all these pictures, they are coming and going. When we are seeing, when I am becoming actually aware, some nice person on the screen, and if I think, let me have meet that person, let me shake hands with that person, what I am going to touch? That person or the screen? What? Screen, sure? Sure? Is there anybody has any doubt about it? What are we going to touch? Screen. Let us remember this, that the screen is the reality there. If you see somebody doing some evil act there, a villain, and if you say, let me kill that villain, and if you have a gun, suppose it is in America, it's possible, you know. if somebody takes out the gun and shoots that fellow on the, what will that make? The screen will get a hole, is it not? That is what is going to happen. If you see that there is a big fire in the movie, do you take your phone from the pocket and then call 911? You don't. You know that it is not real. It is the screen alone that is real. I am seeing the screen in the form of a man, in the form of a woman, in the form of a child, in the form of an old man, as Shweta Shwetara Upanishad says, Tvam Stri Tvam Pumanasi Tvam Kumara Utva Kumari. Oh, screen, oh divine, you alone have become a woman, a man, a boy, a girl. All this you are appearing through all days. Let us feel that same one self is going through all these different manifestations. You don't require two screens for a hero and a villain. One screen for Rama and another for Ravana. No Ramayana will happen, you see. even if you are a great devotee, you will not say, oh, how can this Ravana, that villain, share the same screen with Rama? No, no, same screen. These are just the different manifestations. Different pictures come and go. So this is the important thing, to feel that screen. And we have to feel that screen. That is pratibodh. Every vibration of awareness is really the awareness actually of the screen. When you are seeing a man, you are seeing the self in the form of man. When I am seeing, say, a woman, it is the self that is being seen in the form of a woman. When I am seeing something that I love, I am seeing that self in the form of that beloved. If I am seeing something that I don't like, again the same self appearing in that form. It is the same self that is in and through all. And then when we see this, imagine, think of it, friends, then you are all. Just as there are no two selves, one working through this eye and another working through this eye. Not that one person is seeing the food and another person is eating it. The same person is working through all these instruments. Now, this expanded, that I am the same, the self is same in different bodies. A great idea, the great solution that Vedanta brings. It is difficult to feel it because of our addiction. I am separate, that fellow is separate. No, the same one being, the soul is not different. The bodies and the minds, they are different, that's all. It is because of these shapes you call this and this. Like you fill water in this glass, in another glass, in another glass. Is the water different? Glasses are different, that's all. So these are like all different glasses. The soul, the self, is the same. No difference at all. When we realize this truth, life is fulfilled. The riddle is solved. This is the truth of the Upanishads. Now this truth is to be made from intellectual understanding into a tangible, practical, living experience. The remaining two chapters are about that, how we do it. And the next chapter will be telling actually that next verse actually in this chapter, which is a very inspiring verse. And it concludes this second chapter, that this is to be realized in life. This truth is for realizing it in life. It is not matter of talk. It is not matter also of understanding it intellectually. It is to be realized, experienced, because our experience is where our knowledge actually is. Not what we talk, but what I actually experience. So, iha cheda vedi datha satyamasti, na chediha vedi in mahati vinashti. If we realize the truth in this life, then we have made good use of the life. Then this, if you know it here in this life, then that is the good use of life. Otherwise, it is a big loss. It is a bad investment. It is gone down the drain. This life is wasted if we do not realize this truth. The other things that we achieve in life, they are meaningless, friends. What does it matter whether you are living in a big palace or in a small hut? It doesn't really count at all. It doesn't count whether you have 10 PhDs or whether you are an illiterate person. Does not matter at all. In the final analysis, it is no use. Whether you were a big ruler or you had no power at all in the social structure, doesn't matter much at all. What matters is, have you realized this truth? Upanishads are replete with this message. Iha vedit atha satyamasti. This is the use of life, proper use of life. You have made good use of life. Not, if you don't do this, a big loss. Human life is a big investment. And then if we don't make good use of it, it is all gone. It is told in various scriptures that how important is this human birth. It is, we have invested a lot of our good deeds to get this human body, which has the capability of transcending this bondage. And if we do not do it, all that investment came to naught. Our life, even though after getting the human body, is just invested in animal pleasures, then it is gone. And next time when we have to choose another body, it will be some other creature's body that will come to us. Because that is what we were interested in after all. So, it is very important, friends, that it is, you don't use a spacecraft, a spaceship that is capable of, say, going to Mars or whatever to move inside the city. A car or a bicycle also will do that job. If we are using a spaceship for that, then it is misuse. It will be not capable of doing that. So a human life invested in animal pursuits is a wastage. It is, you will not be able to enjoy animal pleasures also very well, because it is not meant for that. You cannot eat like a pig can eat, you see. A little extra or something, allergies and this and that. So no use. It is very important, therefore, that we make good use of this. It is so bhuteshu bhuteshu vichitya dhira pritya smar loka damruta bhavanti. By seeing that screen in every picture, by seeing that self in every appearance, we realize the truth and become thus immortal, realize the goal of life. And then we will be described, that description will come, how to get there. So thank you very much, friends. So we saw that the truth is that the same self pervades all different names and forms. The self in the eater and the eaten is the same. The food that we were eating at the lunch time, the one who was eating, and the food like the sandwich or whatever, the self in both is really the same. There is no difference in them. This is how Taittiriya Upanishad puts this truth, that the one who eats is the same as the one who is eater. The same truth pervades both of them, that there is no difference in the self, in everything, that the reality in every name and form is the same one self. And this is the realization of the sages. In fact, Taittiriya Upanishad tells that who is a saint, the one who experiences this truth is the saint. Asanne vasa bhavati asad brahmeti veda chet asti brahmeti ched veda santamenam tato viduriti. If somebody says that the Brahman or God does not exist, then that person is denying one's own existence. And if the person sees that self pervading all different forms, then that person becomes the saint. Santa means one who sees the true existence, not the reflected existence, but the existence itself, the truth. And this was, as we can see, the experience of Sri Ramakrishna. In Sri Ramakrishna's life, we see all these Upanishadic statements coming alive, becoming a matter of tangible experience. And this is what a spiritual aspirant is to do, to make these statements a part of experience. They should be reflected not in only in our intellect, but in our life too. And this is told by the Upanishads. The last verse of the second chapter we saw that this is this has to become our life. And then as the spiritual aspirant progresses on this path, the path otherwise would have been very smooth, but there are obstacles. One obstacle that is described here, which is the obstacle really. All other obstacles are kind of partial manifestations of this main obstacle, and that is the ego. Sense of I being someone. I being, and this I is always very good, better than others. That is, I here, I am good person. It is, everybody feels I am good person. The others are not so good. The others need correction. It is, that is why we have correction facilities for others, you know. It is. So it is, I am always a good thing. And that is why psychology of criticizing people is that. Why we criticize others? So that in comparison, we are seen very good. If somebody points out that, well, to me, that's, well, this is not the right thing you did, this is not the proper thing, then instead of accepting my fault or I didn't do my mistake, what I try to do is show that so many others have done worse than I have. And so, why do I do that? Look at that. Why do we do that? So that in comparison to that, I don't look as bad. I look better. So because this I here is always better than those of the others. So this is a big obstacle in our spiritual life, that I am superior, better than others. In fact, I paint myself as being harassed by others. That suits me, you know, that I am not bad, but the others are bad. They are after me. They always want to put me down or create problems for me. But nobody creates more problems for myself than this kind of understanding of I am so and so and better than others. Especially, this becomes an obstacle for the spiritual aspirants. For those who are not spiritual aspirants, they do not need to consider this as an obstacle. Because they are not on a journey, you see. So for them, it doesn't matter. It is only for those who are looking for this attainment of spiritual wisdom, it proves to be a very stubborn, big obstacle. And to illustrate that, the third chapter begins with a story. A story is good, especially after lunch and in the afternoon. It is. So the Upanishads, the sages also probably realized that we had now somewhat heavy philosophy. So now they tell it through a story. And the story is a depiction of how, as a person does spiritual practice, then attains victories. In that realm, one attains victories. Now these victories, what is that victory? It is manifestation of that divine. That is what makes us, you know, see that what used to be, earlier I used to be a very lousy person. Now, after spiritual practice, I have become much better now. Earlier, I used to be bothered a lot by the problem of anger. And now, see, I have conquered anger, and I have conquered this, I have conquered that, and so forth. Not only that, people become, how humble I have become. They become proud about their humility. Who is humbler than me? See how I am humble. So it is. Now, certainly, these advancements had been there, but the ego, our enemy, enters by a subtle gate, this thing, in a subtle way, by a back door, unawares, like a Trojan horse, that it is a horse, so it entered. And in fact, I saw one cartoon which said that the guard, they were guarding, you know, and then an elephant was approaching. And the guards said amongst each other, well, that is elephant. We have to watch for the horse only. So the elephant got in. You know, so now this time those soldiers had been packed in an elephant, so instead of a horse. So it changes the form. The enemies, they come in different forms. Freud has very nicely described how the lust takes various different forms, sometimes that of compassion, sometimes love, sometimes many other, being nice, and so forth. In all these different ways, things enter, the unwanted things enter, changing the garb. And then you stand to get vanquished because of that. So to ward off that danger, this story begins, and it is told with that well-known stories in the Indian epics, that there had been a fight, a battle between the Devas and the Asuras. Devas means like angels, you know, good things, and Asuras, the demons, the bad people. And then, because of the help of the divine, with the help of the divine or the strength of the divine, the devas, the good tendencies prevailed. And as soon as they prevailed over the demonic tendencies, they started thinking. They forgot that it was the manifestation of God. They started taking it as their own victory and became puffed up. Hey, we had this victory. And then to bring them to their senses back again to the proper understanding, the divine assumes a form of a very lustrous heavenly being. It is called here in the Upanishad as Yaksha. Because we have very little time, I am not going verse by verse. There are some questions also. So these gods, they were kind of perplexed seeing this very big and lustrous and imposing figure right amongst them. And they wanted to know, who is this? Who is this intruder amongst us? We need to know, who is this? And so they told the fire god amongst them, Agni, fire god. Hey, Agni, can you go and find out, just inquire who that fellow is? What is his business here? And Agni said, oh, sure, I will do it. And he was already proud and became further puffed up that such important works, you know, all others, they are okay, but for important things, they always look upon me. So Agni thought much of himself and then proudly walks there. But then as he came in the presence of this lustrous being, he got dumbfounded. He couldn't utter a word. And that happens, you know, when you initially think of lot of things. I will say this, I will say that, I will say that. But when the time comes, when you get so much overwhelmed by the other person, that you don't say the right thing or don't say at all, forget everything, is for many people this is a problem in interviews, that they prepare everything very nicely, but then when they are facing a questioning panel, it seems that all their wisdom is forsaking them. So this Agni didn't speak a word, and this Yaksha asked the Agni. Now the reverse, you know, he had gone to inquire, but now this Yaksha inquires, hey, who are you? And this Agni replies, I am Agni, I am the fire, and also tells, I am also called Jataveda. His that degree is also told, I am PhD and so forth, you see. So without being actually asked about it, I see. So wonderful, but what is it that you do? What is your special feature? My special power. I can burn everything in this universe. Wow, is it so? That sounds great. Just give me a little demonstration of that. Here is this dry blade of grass. A little dry blade of grass, he puts it there. An example, burn this dry little leaf. And the Agni went to do that. We want to prove ourselves, is it not? So, Agni, what is the need really? If he can burn the whole universe, why he needs to convince this fellow? But because of ego, we lose the sense. And said, okay, I will show him who I am. And then tried to burn that. And the Agni, the fire god, who could burn the whole universe with the divine power. When alone, when bereft of that, he could not burn even that little blade of grass. And then, crestfallen, he goes back to other gods. Said, sorry, I couldn't know. And then they sent Vayu, the wind god. Wind god also thought great about, hey, this Agni always wants to show, go far, can't do anything. I knew that he will not be able to do this. It again, okay, I will do it. And goes, and the same thing happened to him as well. Couldn't say a word. He was asked that, what do you do? Who are you? And he told that, well, I am the wind god. I see, wow. And I can go everywhere, is it so? And then, what's your special feature? I can blow away everything in the world. Wow, is that so? And the same blade of grass was put by this Yaksha in front of this wind god. Hey, just let me see how you blow it. I am interested in seeing that. Can you do it? And this wind god who could blow big things, the houses, we have seen in tornado how the houses get blown away, but couldn't even after repeated attempts, couldn't blow away that little blade of grass. And so crestfallen goes back. Then having these two lieutenants completely defeated, the king of them, Indra, decided, well, it seems that every time I have to do these works, I try to give scope to my assistants, you know, so that they will grow. But they are useless, really. I will have to do the work. So he goes there. Now, he had much bigger an ego than others. So the Yaksha, this divine being, this lustrous being, he did not even care to talk to him and just vanished in front of him. And this Indra remained standing there. What happened? And then he started introspecting. He was great amongst these gods. There was some special features, some good, some virtues in him. And that had made him the king of gods. So he started introspecting and realized that it was our folly, that we thought that it is our victory. It is not our victory, really, it is they. And when that introspection made the things clear to him, there, this beautiful story goes to tell that there, instead of that Yaksha, the Divine Mother appears. And through that Divine Mother, is written here that it is Uma, that Uma Haimavati, that Divine Mother appears here to Indra, and through her Indra gets this wisdom that it is the manifestation of Divine, and that was making you victorious. It was not your personal glory. Don't get puffed up. If you get puffed up, you will be blown away. You will be defeated. So a spiritual aspirant should remember this. As spiritual aspirant, sometimes we feel that I am special, I am superior to others. Yeah, I am a Swami, what do you think, you know, it is, yeah. So it is such ego, naturally, it tries to come up, and we should beware of that. That is, you are doing good, but that is not your glory, it is the glory of the God. As Sri Ramakrishna used to give that example, when you are cooking some veggies, you take in a big pot, in lot of water, you put those potatoes and all other little things, and then they start dancing as it were, as the water is boiling, you see them jumping up and down in the boiling water. And they may feel, a potato may feel that how nice I am dancing. A piece of cucumber will feel, wow, nice, what a great dance I am doing. They put out the fire and all their dance stops instantaneously. So it is like that. It is not our power, friends. So this is to be remembered, and that is how Indra got this wisdom. And through Indra, the others also got it. So the great lesson is this, that this I that we feel is really only an expression of the divine. And so to see that as not an entity superior to similar other expressions, but to feel that one divine being is playing through all forms. One Swami Sardananda was, those who have read his biography would know how he used to be immersed in lot of work, and at the same time there was the divine awareness about presence of God all the time. So once at that Udbodhan office, a devotee came there to see Holy Mother. She used to stay there, and Sardananda Swami, even now you can see the place where Sardananda used to do work there in Udbodhan. He was the general secretary of the order. And then at that time, This man did pranam to Sardananda, and well, go up, there is the Holy Mother. Why pranam to me? No, you are such a big Swami, and so forth. You are, and Sardananda tells, look, with the grace of that, the one who is there up, if she wants, she can bring me to your place and you to my place. And that is, it is his, that wish of Divine Mother, that is keeping me here and you there. If she wants, she can put like, I can lift the glass and then put it here or put it here. So easily the Divine Mother can change the sides. It is, we are powerless, friends. Our only power that is going to bless us is to feel that God alone is doing everything. It is not for us to do it. We can only be servants to the divine, that's all. So, this wisdom the devas got, and thus they got illumined. Then, it is told later in this Upanishad how one should meditate. It is, sometimes it is thought that, well, in the Upanishads there is no mention of forms and the secondary worships or such things. That's not true. Actually, this form of, for example, Uma, the Divine Mother, and in fact, if at all we want to see the principle of God incarnating as man in Upanishads, this is the place that is shown. Although Upanishads never speak of avatar, what is called the essence of all Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, it is all replete with the principle of God incarnating as man. And in Upanishads, there are some indirect references, and a very powerful one is this. that here the divine appeared in the form of the divine mother, and thus through that divine mother Indra got the spiritual knowledge illumination. So this is an idea of how in Upanishads that how God incarnates as a human being. Anyway, then comes this description of how one should meditate. The meditation is told that, see, one meditation is told as Vyadyudata, means like the lightning. You see in the sky the lightning, and the whole sky is illumined for a fraction of a second, and then it is gone. You cannot tell that lightning, hey, wait for a minute, let me call my friend and then show it to him. It comes and goes, but it comes and goes, leaves an impression. So now meditate on that impression. We all have moments in life when we get a strong feeling of the divine. Everybody has that impression. Sometimes or the other, that divine presence comes and illumines us, but it is gone. Now it has gone, but now you have seen it once. You have known it once. Now meditate on that experience. Ha, you saw it. Then something still closer. Nimishishada. That how closing the eyelids, the world is and is not. When you open the eyelids, the eyes see. And so you feel that, hey, the world is. The eyelids close, gone, you don't see it. So meditate on that, that it is and it is not. It is, meditate on that experience, that how this whole universe, everything that we see, everything around which we feel so real. Why do we feel it so real? Well, you say, I saw it by my own eyes. What is it? It is just dependent on opening and closing of the eyelids. It is, so meditate on that, just as this world comes and goes like that, you know. It is like that the world is and is not, comes and goes. A person who is here today, gone tomorrow, things that we thought that are so real, no more, just go away. It is a passing phenomena. Let us meditate on that, that the reality, as modified by our sense organs, it is changing, shifting all the time. And so that helps us to see the screen behind, you see. So meditate on that. Then there are also the secondary helps for meditation. A secondary, please, sometimes the word secondary gets confused as to mean unimportant. Not at all, very important. It is secondary means it is to be used for the primary purpose. Its importance is for realizing the primary purpose. It is like you know, turning key in the keyhole of the car. Now, it is a secondary in the sense that for driving you are doing it, but it is important, otherwise you will not be able to drive. So, it is not primary. It is secondary, but it is very important. And what is it? Name. Name of the God. Name of the God is so important. And with name, our universe becomes real. what gives badness to anything. Yogatmananda was supposed to come for the retreat and Yogatmananda came to give this retreat. Now when Yogatmananda agreed and a month or so elapsed, now the particles are all changed. What has remained same? Actually nothing but name. In everything, badness is imparted by only the name. Our teacher at training center, he used to give example of a soccer team, Mohan Bagan. You can take here, say, baseball team like our Boston Red Sox. So in our area, a lot of people are big fans of Red Sox. So much so that it was told about one person was introducing the new university vice chancellors at the introduction meeting at UMass. And he said, he is very good, very cooperative. He will help you in everything that you want. Very loving person. You have to be very careful, though, in only one respect. Do not go there with a Yankee t-shirt. That will really infuriate him. So, because he is a very die-hard Red Sox fan. So, it is. Now, what is this Red Sox? The players keep on changing all the time. Wherever they get more money and more these things, they go there. So, is Red Sox the players? No, they are not players. It is not coach. It is not the owners. They also keep on changing. What is Red Sox? Just name. And that is actually with everything. It is just name that gives the sense of thatness. How do you know that you are taking a dip in the same river? Just the name. The water is going away all the time. It is different. So actually all the particles are changing. Before eating the lunch, something you would call that. Now that very sandwich you are calling as I, is it not? It was that, now it became I. So it is yet just a name. So therefore we have to use name to give this our ideal a stability, a reality. That is a constitutional necessity for us. And so this gives us a name, Tad Vanam. Vanam, a name is given. Vana is the name. What is Vana? A forest. Like the trees and the forest. What is the difference? The trees make the forest. There is that famous story that two people were walking through a very dense and kind of scary forest, and one of them said, "Oh, well, what a scary forest." And one tree heard that. And then after these people passed a little ahead, asked another tree, "A scary forest, have you ever seen a scary animal like forest here?" The other tree said, "No, I am for so many years I have never come across any forest." Then so let us ask some other trees. Couldn't tell. Then they went to another redwood tree that was there for 500 years. You might have seen. No, I am here for 500 years, but never saw. I saw many other things. I saw bears. I saw deer. I saw snakes. I saw so many other. I saw lions also, but never came across a forest. Must be terrible something. What is this forest? What is this forest? What is this forest? And, well, Then they heard a voice from the skies. You are that. You are that. You are the forest. You live in forest. You survive in forest. You make forest. You are really that. So that is vanam, to feel the universal consciousness, shedding away the individual consciousness and embracing the universal consciousness. So that is the name, vana, vanam. So meditate with this name. Meditate on the truth with this name, vanam. And so name is very important spiritual practice. Tulsidas tells that, you know, the name, I have given the highest place. I have given place, you know, there is, I accept the formless God. I also accept the God with form. The God with qualities, God without qualities. Both are good, both are infinite, and I salute both. That both, aguna saguna brahma sarupa, aguna and saguna. The aguna, yes, so without qualities and with qualities. Both are infinite, both are beyond description. And I salute both of them. And he says, well, I have given the respective places for them. Where in my awareness that he and Irgun, I have given that in my heart, I have kept the Nirgun, the one without, beyond all qualities, beyond all that specifications. That is in my awareness. Nayanani Saguna. In my eyes, means in my sense, or whenever I am dealing with that, I see that that alone has taken these forms. So I have given the place of I to the one with qualities. But I have given the place, a very superior place, to the name of God. Rasana Nama Sunam. My tongue, my organ of speech, I have placed the name of God on that. Why? Because with name, both of them can be captured. The name, he says, in my opinion, the name of God is superior to both of these. Because of this name, the saguna as well as nirguna, both of them can be experienced in life. So name is the great means to do that. And then, after telling this, the disciple, he said, well, this is all that I have told you. The education is kind of complete, not really, because the disciple asked apparently a very, very silly question, or request something very silly. We would think that, oh, such a great disciple, such a person with such a sincere urge for God realization, why he is asking such a question? He asked the teacher, Upanishadam bho bruhiti. Tell me the Upanishad. At the end, after all this is being told, now he is saying, tell me Upanishad, please. Does it make sense? Yes and no. It is, teacher confirmed that what I had told you was Upanishad. This is the great wisdom that the sages have given to the students. This is enough. But then he tells something very, very important. In fact, a parting message when everything is kind of told, yet certain important things, certain basics may get overlooked. And so, at the conclusion, those basics are being emphasized. What are those? That the moral values, the ethical and moral disciplines, they are to be always kept up. Tasya dhamo shama iti, that shama dhamma iti, shama dhamma, all those qualities, and then it says satya pratishtha, that the truth is the basis of all this, that one has to practice in life. Shama means control of the mind, and dhamma, control of the external sense organs and the body. They are to be practiced. Without that, without this practice, it will be just daydreaming. Spiritual practice will not proceed at all unless one establishes it on this bedrock of these moral and ethical disciplines, the disciplines of putting life, our day-to-day life, under these moral virtues or values, as we saw in the prayers in the beginning, that the disciple prays that may all those qualities necessary for God realization be with me. Yes, at the end again that is reminded, that don't neglect those. Those are very important. Patanjali calls this Yama Niyama, which are very similar to Shama Dhamma, as the Sarvabhauma Mahavrataha, means these are the things that all people have to have in their life. It is their authority is over everybody. Whether you are practicing this type of meditation or that type of meditation, whatever it may be, but these things you have to practice. You have to be having this moral disciplines in your life. Shama, Dhamma has to be there in one's life. And then Satyam Pratishtha, that it is, you have to be truthful in life, as Sri Ramakrishna said, that speaking the truth is the austerity in this age. Speak truth. Do not take recourse to the lies. It is, and this speaking the truth should be not only a formal legal truth, but it should be true in the intent also, in the implication also. It has to be something that is true. The truth, as it is to be understood in spiritual context, is a matter of being very sincere, straightforward, honest. That is the meaning of being truthful. Shankaracharya says that what it means is, when you use your speech to impart what is your awareness, when you want to impart that awareness to others, your knowledge is to be conveyed to others. What is inside you, when you are conveying it through words to others, then that is being truthful. Not just letting something like the pharmaceuticals and others, you know that. They will tell, this is good for this, and you must take this, and this does that. And then, just as a that statutory requirement, in the advertisement, and it may cause this thing. Is that truth? It is. You will be given lot of promise. You will get so much benefit. You will get this much points and this many things. And then under that there will be printed white on white. You know that nobody can proper read. Very fine writings. If you miss this, then there will be so much penalty. There will be so much this thing. They don't want you to read it. Because if you read it, you will not get into their trap. So, it is, maybe it is legally it is true, but morally it is not being truthful. So, one has to be straightforward and truthful. That is the basis for spiritual evolution. So, that is what is emphasized at the end. And thus, we tried to see very briefly, especially the last two sections, we did not dwell long enough on that. Please read it and see how profound that message is, how useful it is in our life. These Upanishads, they will make us strong, as Swami Vivekananda used to say, that what they speak from their every page is the strength. And strength is what we need in our spiritual practice. And let us hope and pray that, well, may we be able to realize this truth in our life. There is the earliest we do the best, but important thing is direction to begin. The sages are very compassionate. They understand if we are not able to take a big leap today, but to the extent that we can do, we should be able to do. Doesn't matter that somebody can go by a supersonic jet to some place. Somebody may take a train, or somebody may go bicycling. Somebody may be walking. Doesn't matter. If the direction is right, sooner or later we will make it. So we have to keep on advancing. That is the message of this wonderful Upanishad. So one question, I don't know which is first and which is, but we get so caught up in the movie we are watching. How can we remember to concentrate on the screen? The nice way of seeing the screen is switch the movie off and then you see the screen. So, therefore, it is told that let this scene be turned off for some time and then you will be able to see the movie. And then even when the movie comes on, you know that it is screen. So this turning off the screen is trying to get away from all these worldly concerns. As Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that holy company and going into solitude, that helps to make us see the screen. When you are not, I am not able to see the screen, but somebody sitting by my side, I see that person is able to see the screen. So that makes me look more penetratively. That is the use of holy company. If you are in the holy company, then, I see you are seeing the screen. Where is it? Just tell me. And then I start at least feeling that since this man is seeing the screen, he knows that the screen is there, and he is not a liar, he is not a cheat, so I can believe him. Do we not believe Google? So we won't believe the sages, it is superstition. But believing Google is very good, you know. It is. it has become a really a disease that people take it to be true, you know, that because it was on internet, because it is in Google. I told, where did Google take it, you know, do you know this? And then he thought, yeah, whatever we put on web here and there, that Google presents that, that's all. So it is not that whatever comes in Google has to be true. It is, a sage is telling that, so there is a possibility that there is the screen. Let me look at it. And then we gradually start seeing it ourselves too. That many times it is told that company helps, seeing a very tiny star, and we call it that, you know, the Arundhati Nyaya. Arundhati is the name of a very tiny star amongst what is it called, that kite formation. Saptarshi, we call it Saptarshi. What is
Big Dipper.
Yeah. So in that, the middle of that tail, there is that that star. That star is called Vasishtha, and there is, by the side of that, there is a very tiny star. So that has been given the name of Vasishtha's wife, the sage Vasishtha's wife, Arundhati. So as such, if you are, you go to see where is that star, Arundhati, you won't see it. But then the one who knows, he tells you, okay, you are seeing this formation, look at that formation. Ha, okay, yeah, I can see that. Now, look at that middle star, you see that? Yeah, concentrate on that. And then by the side of that, do you see this tiny? Aha, okay, I now got it. So, the holy company is very helpful in that. That the subtle things that we miss in the holy company, we can start understanding, seeing those things. So Sri Ramakrishna used to say, holy company, and go in solitude, where for at least a little while, the bombardment of all the worldly concerns will not be there to that intensity, at least externally. You will be able to get some peace of mind where you can now concentrate on that. So go to a retreat instead of staying, you stay at home all the time. Once a week you can request Atmajnananji, can I spend a night here or a weekend here? And yeah. So you can go to any other such place and stay there for some time. That will remove this stranglehold of the worldly impressions, at least for a little time. And then one can feel that voice of the Lord coming in us. So we can also hear the flute of Lord Krishna being played in our heart too. And now with so much constant drums of the world being beaten, that voice of Krishna's flute, that is lost, we can't hear that. But when that is pushed aside a little bit, then we can hear that. So that is the way to learn to see the screen that is on which the movie is being played. Gradually, we will be able to do that. While it is one reality manifested in different forms, what should your self take be? If one of these forms is being mean or harmful to you? This question arises only because we are not able to see that the same reality is in various forms. If we are able to see or even a glimpse of it, this question will not arise at all. As the example I had given to you, that suppose your teeth bite the tongue, do you go and break your teeth? It was mean to the tongue. No. It is that question doesn't arise there. It is only because we feel that I, and again always it is, I am always good. The other forms they are trying to, eliminate or hurt this form. Nobody ever thinks that this form is also trying to hurt the other form. It is always, I am so good. If every I is so good, how the world will be, you see. But this idea doesn't strike. It is, this question is really because we think that there are so many evil people in the world. If we are so good, then why are we in this evil world? We need not be. It is, we get what we deserve. It is, Swami Vivekananda says in one place that we think that let everybody be a very good person. There's this world, everybody should be a very good, very truthful, very cooperative, very, soft-spoken and nice person. If suppose the world is like that, please ask a question to yourself. Shall I get a place in that kind of world? I may not get the place in that kind of, because not always. Jo khoje dil apna mujhsa bura na koi. That is the saying of Kabir, that if I start seeing all the evil here, there and everywhere, but if I really look into myself, then the things are different. It is actually because I am evil, I started seeing evil everywhere. Tulsidas says that a sign of an evil person is that that person looks at the blemishes or faults or drawbacks of others with 1,000 eyes, as if he has got 1,000 eyes, and looks at the drawbacks of others with those 1,000 eyes, looking for that. So you find it, you know. So it is, one need not really go to that. It is, at a relative level, one can say that we should ask ourselves, do we not do it like that? Sometimes when we get angry, that why did that person does like that? Did we not do sometimes like this? Or some other things, some bad behavior, did it not, was it never done by us? And even the thought will calm us down. It is very important that our response should be such that it will help us. If we say that I must go and kill that evil form, then we will become evil. It will not help us. And therefore, we should understand as spiritual aspirant this teaching. That is how Jesus has given a new dimension. He says that you heard, it is told that eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, a golden rule kind of thing. But I say unto you, love your enemies. This is love your enemies. That is the take, you know, that if somebody is seen hurting you, love that person. That is the best thing by which we will get benefited. It is the teaching given by Buddha as well, exactly the same, that when you see the anger, respond it by compassion, non-anger, and so forth. Every lecture we hear, I hear, talks about no bhay, all are one. Yet in practical life I see old people still make huge differentiation from smallest to the largest. Smallest, that is, the food I give my family is always superior to what I bring to the ashram. Then can you imagine how little we really feel for the hungry in this country and in India? Yes, that is, if it is practically the case, yes. So we all need to work. Upanishad provides us the direction. See, all ethics and morality, it hinges on this, the gap between what is and what should be. We have this understanding that this is how it should be and what is. And to bridge this gap is the matter of evolving ourselves morally and spiritually. That this is how it should be. The sages have kept an ideal, yes. It doesn't matter whether somebody is old or young. It is for everyone that we have to go ahead to fill this gap. There is no point in, thinking that, well, this is all sounds good, I hear in the lectures. Exactly. We hear it in the lectures. We talk about it in the lectures. We read that in the books. And when we look at our life, we feel that, well, it is not actually in agreement with the ideal. Well, okay. Okay in the sense that is the fact. But that should propel us to go ahead. When you go ahead in that direction, and slowly the gap will be bridged. And then we will get to the point. It is like journey. You want to go to some place and you are at some other place. Then only journey is possible. Journey is possible when you want to go and you are not actually reached. Then journey is possible. So the spiritual practice is possible only for those who want to reach at the highest ideal and yet are not reached there. So the gap could be big, gap could be small. We need not bother about the size of the gap. We should see that we should bridge it. And instead of looking at others, we should look at ourselves. I want to bridge that gap in my life. That's it. Whether somebody else is doing that or not, I need not spend my energy in that. Is anybody paying me for doing that? Then why should I unnecessarily waste my energies, whether Atmajnananji is following right path or not. Why? Let me follow. Am I following? So, it is unnecessary that if somebody else is doing or not, I need not give extra headache. Already there are enough things that I have to take care of. I don't need to take or buy the burden of somebody else right now. So, let us try to bridge this gap as enthusiastically, as much vigorously as possible. And that is the best thing we can do. It is whether old people or young people, it doesn't really matter. We say here the Guru is one all, yet how few actually pray and do japa, remember to send Guru, Guru Dakshina, etc., etc. Maybe a few, those few will realize God. It doesn't depend on the number, you know. So many buy lottery tickets, how many win? that doesn't really matter though. How few do it? Well, those few will realize God. Whether they are many or few, one need not worry about. Let me do it, that is important. How few do it, I have no time to really make a calculation and go on asking. I am not taking a survey on everyone. Hey, okay, come on. How do you do it? Do you do it? Do you do this? Do you do japat so many times? And keep a record of that. Make a statistics. Publish a graph and so forth. Not necessary. I should do it? Yes. Is there a doubt about that? Whether I should do it or not? That's it. Whether somebody else does it or not, whether many do it or few do it, forget about that. It is to be done. If only a few are doing it, those few will attain to the truth. How few take up the journey? Well, those few will reach the destination. I don't have to worry about why only a few are taking up the journey. That's it. How there is an incident like that, you know, told by one Swami. Recently he passed away. He used to, as a young man, he used to conduct a youth group and used to invite Swami from our Mumbai center. Those days Swami Sambuddhananji used to be there. So he used to invite him every week, and that Swami used to come. But he used to feel sad, only 4 or 5 or sometimes not even that many, they are coming for this. And Swami, see, he takes the trouble of coming all the way, and then only, and sometimes hardly 1 or 2 person, they are there. And that Swami saw his that sadness on his face. Only very few were there. And he asked him, hey, when you go to a vegetable market, how many are there? Hey, lot of people there, is it not? Yeah, exactly. A lot of people are there. When you go to a cloth shop, a clothing shop, a lot of people, maybe a little less than the vegetable shop, but sizable number there. When you go to a diamond shop, very few are genuine diamond buyers. But that doesn't mean that you should not be one of them. Don't go by numbers, how many in the world are doing like that. And let us not curse the present age. This is a common thing that people in this age of materialistic civilization, Always it has been like that. That is, even in the time of Krishna, it was similar. So he says, Manushyanam sahasreshu, amongst thousands of people, one or two may be making an attempt. And amongst thousands of such who make attempt, maybe one or two get it. But, well, why I am not going to be one of them? Yeah, let me become one of them. When I see people cursing the world, when they get the short end of the stick, why me? Why me? One lady, she lost her job in her whole section. She lost the job, others got it. So she was so angry, why me? But we never ask this question, that when I get promotion in my job, why me? Nobody asks this question then, you know. It is, why me? It is only when we should consider this, that others may not realize God, but why should I not? If I have the potential to do it, and Swamiji, Thakur, Upanishads, they assure that I have. So let me realize the truth. I don't have much time to look whether these others, everybody is realizing it or not, whether the whole world realizes it or not. Forget it. At least you do it. And it is, sometimes the question gets asked it like this, what is the use if I become, I realize the truth, but look at this vast, so many people, the society will just remain the same. What is then the use of my realizing the truth? Our Tyagananji gave a nice answer. All these bad people, what is the point in my becoming such? I said, well, how does it help? And he said, well, at least one potential troublemaker is reduced, is it not? So, isn't it good reason? Isn't good enough? So, let me realize God. So, it is. And we should be, you know, happy doing it. And then the problem will solve itself. We will cease to see evil. We will start seeing good in everyone. It will be an automatic effect of our being on this positive journey. Why is it so? Maybe lectures should have one or two recipe like points so we understand what it is we must do for unknown others. So we can actually go towards feeling we are one. Yes, feel it. This is the what we have to do. This, there is nothing more. Not that something is not being told by the scriptures. Not that something, some secret formula is withheld. And no, it is all told. Everything has been already given. Only thing, we have to work on it. All the material for working is given. The recipe is complete. Nothing more is required for the completing recipe, except we have to cook, that's all. If we do not begin cooking and keep on just looking at the recipe, then it will not work. We have to try out the recipe. We may fail 1,000 times, but every time we will learn a little bit. We should be patient and progress in that direction. So, and this is by the grace of God, the last question. Oh, you have. You sing and you will get the answer. The seeing of yourself in others, are we responding to what we dislike in us when we intensely dislike others and similar to liking? Yes, psychologically it is very similar, that when we dislike people, it is something in us that we see out there, and so that gives us a solid reason to dislike that person. And it can be any, you know, it can be any. If, for example, I do not like certain things, if I suppose do not like coffee, any person who likes coffee, not a good person. Why? What do you mean drinks coffee, you see? It is as if in essence it is anything bad or what. But that is how, what I feel that is bad in me, it is, and I project it on others and feel that that is how they are. If I don't have that in me, I will not see it in others as well. It is, as Swami Vivekananda says, that for a little baby doesn't see anybody as a thief. Because there is no thief in that little baby, so cannot see a thief. And we, when the thief in us wakes up, then we start thinking that this fellow is thief and so forth. So it is that tendency to see what is bad in somebody else. We dislike that. Because we dislike something, this thing in us, we dislike that person in whom we see that. And similarly about liking too. It is, therefore it is a story, samana shileshu, a good saying, samana shileshu vyasaneshu sakhyam, that if you have the common things, common addictions, then you become friends on the basis of that. That, oh, you like that, you like that, okay, so we become friends. So that is how we like and we dislike. Maharaj, learning, listening to your talk, I felt, yes, it can realize Brahman. I can realize Brahman. Soon I feel my arthritic pain, and that pain becomes my Brahman, and I dwell in that. Well, that is also Brahman. See that arthritic pain also as Brahman. It is, in fact. It is, but don't limit it just there. That's it. You know, your smile is also equally Brahman. Just as the arthritic pain is Brahman. Everything, without any limitation, without any confinement, without line of demarcation, is Brahman. Big or small, painful or pleasant, all is Brahman. The painful stays with us longer, and so it attracts more part of our attention. Because we don't want it, we want to remove it. So it is the pleasant, the time appears to be quite short. Pain, and the time appears to be quite long. But both are the same, the divine, the Brahman. So we have to learn to see that it is no different. So thank you, friends.